There was a special pull-out section, and the front page of the section has nothing but the pictures of people from all around the country, in various states, from all of the congressional districts, and it said, "These voters represent all of America." And when you open it up, you see more pictures and pages of pictures of people. There's not a lot of writing. It's more visual. I suppose there's writing somewhere, but I don't see it in my section. Maybe I got to go online to find out more about it. But it was just interesting to say, okay, every congressional district across the country, right? What do Americans look like? And then what they did was they put them all in the same place for a weekend, as I understand it, and sort of had a conference with them about how they're feeling about certain issues. And the way the article reads, what writing there is with it, it sounds like it was coordinated by some folks at the University of Chicago. They have this National Opinion Research Center there. And Mike Dennis is one of the people there. He's a senior vice president of something called the Amerispeak Panel. We found him over, I guess, at the U of C this afternoon to talk to us a little bit. Mike, it's John. How are you today?
Very good. Nice to meet you, John.
That's at least my read on this. Tell me what else I should know about what was in my Sunday paper.
Well, you have a good synopsis there. We're very proud to have been part of this study at the NORC at the University of Chicago. And our role was to bring a representative sample of registered voters to the Gaylord Resort for 4 days of deliberations. And the leadership for this project have been doing this kind of work, John, for over 3 decades. And that's Professor James Fishkin at Stanford and Larry Diamond, also at Stanford University. And essentially what happened is that we had a diverse representative group of Americans, complete strangers to each other, come to the Dallas, Texas area and for 4 days talk about issues that a lot of people think are dividing our society. But in point of fact, when you get these people together in small groups and they get a chance to get to know each other and talk about the issues in detail, they end up finding out that they have a lot in common. And I think that's what the final report said. And you mentioned the New York Times being short on words. I can tell you that Professor Fishkin and Diamond, at their website, they have a complete analysis that you can download to learn all the details.
What were some of the conclusions they came to based on this 4-day sort of conference with all of these people?
Well, for me, one of the most remarkable findings is the extent to which people that came to that meeting with extreme political views, whether on the left or the right, they ended up softening their positions. So those who take I'll call it a strong anti-immigrant or immigration stance, Professor Fishkin and Diamond are able to demonstrate a softening of those attitudes as a result of this experience of being able to talk about the issues and meet with experts. And the same thing on the left, too. Professor Fishkin also notes those with more left-leaning or progressive methodologies also tended to gravitate toward more centrist positions. Now, did this happen for all the delegates that were there? Clearly not. But there were some statistical patterns there that were clearly in evidence and could be described.
You know, it sort of makes you think about the soundbite mentality that the media and politicians who use the media, are subjected to, right? I mean, we hear extreme soundbites on CNN from the president at a rally, and then we'll see Joe Biden or somebody like that say something very strident about the president, and it's just driving everybody in opposite directions, isn't it?
Well, this is clearly a major theme right now is the extent to which our media are actually exacerbating political tensions in our society. And an event like this, I think, is a useful reminder that most of the country is relatively centrist. I mean, if you look at the information that we collected from these delegates before they got to Dallas, 4 out of 10 you would describe as political moderates based on the information that they gave us. Most were independents, or they were just left of center politically, or just right of center politically in terms of ideology. So I think you're right. I think, there is in some sense, a pattern where controversy in terms of public opinion is better for ratings, and having people agree with each other just isn't that exciting in terms of getting eyeballs on screens. But I think that is an interesting story, and I think that by bringing these 526 people together, there was a useful reminder here for all of us that it's possible if we get off social media and we actually talk to each other, some good things can happen.
Well, did they talk about things like, say, gun legislation? That's certainly something important to America that we seem to be unable to do anything about.
Well, I'm not so sure about the gun issue, John, but I can tell you health care, immigration, foreign policy issues, taxation. These were major issues that were discussed. And one thing I'll mention to you is that before the delegates actually got to Dallas, there was a 56-page briefing document. That's right, 56 pages that they were expected to read. And these 56 pages went through the five issue areas that were identified beforehand. So there was a tremendous amount of education that occurred for these delegates before they came. And they took it seriously. We were really impressed by the delegates' attention and investment in time that they made so they could be informed when they came to the actual meeting.
And they've been doing this for a few decades? This conference has been going
That's
on
right.
for a long time, huh? And do they just randomly call
right.
people and say, hey, you've been selected and we're going to fly you out? Who pays for all of this?
Yeah, I'll mention a few things in that connection. One of the very first ones was in 1996, and it was hosted in person in Austin, Texas. And my organization, NORC, at the University of Chicago, was responsible for that. In fact, one of our directors, Norman Bradburn, led that operation for NORC back in 1996. In terms of who's funding this, there's a wonderful foundation called Helena Group. And they're a nonpartisan organization trying to make a dent in our society for good, in my view. And they're the ones that put up the funding for this very elaborate operation, which, as you pointed out, involves flying out all 526 delegates. Some of them were obviously in Dallas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so they could drive, but about 90% needed some help with air travel. In terms of how the selections were made, we at NORC, we already have a representative sample of 35,000 households designed to represent the entire country. And what we did there was a very scientific process to identify a group within our panel of households, these 35,000 households, to make sure that they would represent the whole country in terms of party identification, political ideology, right. race, ethnicity. We're really proud of the young. If you look at those pictures there in the New York Times that you started the segment with, you'll see how many young adults we actually had there. We were really proud that, you know, young adult America turned up for America in one room.
Yeah, I have some things to say about it. I mean, there's a couple of things that I think are pretty striking when you look at a sampling of 526 faces that represent the United States of America. But before I get to that, except that we're more centrist than maybe the politicians who are trying to win our favor are, what are some conclusions that you come to, or what do you do with this? Okay, so maybe we're all mm-hmm. actually more moderate than you'd think, but then what about that, right?
Well, I think one thing that's possible here is how do we create America in one room type events on a much larger scale in the future? Professor Fishkin, he has a remarkable phrase where he talks about how social media has been used to divide us in the past as a country. Well, how about using social media as a force for good, where we can do basically web-based Americas in one room, where we can bring together tens of thousands of people in productive and civil conversations about the issues that supposedly divide this country. So I think this is actually a microcosm of what could be possible on a much larger scale by using technology to our advantage. And we're aware that Professor Fishkin and his colleagues are working on a technology that would enable this kind of scaling up of America in one room.
Yeah. You'd have to have somebody moderate the chats on that, right? I mean, isn't it a shame that when on social media you get a bunch of people together, the comments page just pollute the commentary?
Well, isn't it? I mean, perhaps it's possible to have civil but still automated moderators. I think that it's not out of the question that the moderators themselves could represent or be use some form of artificial intelligence, for instance, to give us the ability to do this at very large scale. And so then, it's a little bit of a drain, I'll admit that, John, but it's something that we're working on.
Okay, but then say we do that, then at least the University of Chicago or anybody would be able to point to this massive Democratic, you know, with a small D group of people who represent all the districts in the United States, and by golly, they say this about gun control or healthcare or immigration or Syria. I mean, there would be a clear voice instead of the two sides sniping at each other and never knowing who to believe.
That's right. And it may not surprise you to know that you're not the first person to come up with this idea. The idea is to have an informed citizenry, maybe a cabinet of sorts, a citizen's cabinet, that could advise us on what informed voters think about the issues. Now, is that a representative sample of voters? Of course not. You know, these delegates are changed by the experience of reading these briefing books, meeting their fellow Americans, having the conversations. They are changed in some ways. That's both the blessing and the curse of this kind of methodology. It's a blessing because we get to know what Americans think after they have a chance to think about the issues and talk with their fellow Americans about it. But it can also obviously be criticized as not representing America as we know it, because we obviously had a big intervention in the lives of these delegates by bringing them to Dallas.
You mean that what? That, in fact, all of America isn't going to go through what these people went through, so this is kind of an artificial panel just because they all got in the same room together.
That's right. I mean, it's artificial, but is that necessarily a bad thing?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
What we did was, I think one thing I'll mention here, John, is that the whole project has a level of idealism around it that I find inspiring and, frankly, heartwarming. You know, this idea that if you do bring people together, you inform them. We spend all this money to create this laboratory of registered voters. There's an idealism about that. And it does go back, I think, to the town halls that we like to talk about and learn when we're in high school or even younger, and we're learning about what our early democracy was like in this country. It was largely about villages and small towns and neighbors getting together and deciding things. And I think this American One Room harkens back to that time.
Mike Dennis is on a phone line from the University of Chicago, the National Opinion Research Center, and they coordinated with others to put this event together where, well, the way the New York Times writes about it in this special pullout section with the pictures of the 526 people, it simply says these voters represent all of America. And then at the bottom of the page, it says, and they spent a weekend together. And you think, wow, how interesting. You know, it's funny because when I think about a sort of sampling of Americana these days, what happens often is Donald Trump will have a rally in Minneapolis, or he's going to have a rally. Mm-hmm. He's going to be here in Chicago, say, and all of the people will line up. And what will they be? They'll look like middle-aged to older white Americans. And then the camera will go by, and it's the exact opposite of what this page of pictures looks like. And then the commentary from anybody will be very snarky. They'll try and ridicule those people or paint them in a negative light, or they'll say negative things. But it's the very, very opposite of what I'm looking at right now. And I have to say this. If you do then look at 526 people in this country from all of the one person from each congressional district, is that what you did?
No. Well, we end up having, John, people from 47 states there in the Washington, D.C. area. And so we did not do it by congressional district. Our goal was to have a representative sample of all of America, as opposed to just going to congressional districts specifically.
I see.
So we did have Hawaii there. We had at least two people from Vermont. I met the nice lady from Maine who came over. I got to tell you, John, there's just so many remarkable stories on an individual level of people who'd never been on airplanes before who came to this event. You know, I know of at least one young lady who did not tell her family that she was coming.
Yeah, I read that.
Because, you know, you read about that too. So there are a lot of precious stories like that. I met a young lady actually who attended, and she was in between dialysis sessions. She has renal disease, and she thought it was important enough to come to this event. even in those circumstances, leaving her teenage kids at home.
Wow.
But I can tell you, FaceTiming with them a lot based on what I saw.
Well, but you have a map here then, and it shows where they're from. And it looks like an electoral college map, right? Los Angeles, Chicago, the Northeast, Houston, Miami.
Right.
Those areas are heavily represented because that's where the people are. And when you then look at the pictures of these people, a couple of things jump out at you. And one is that it's not all white folks living in America. Is it? It's
that's right.
It's very ethnically diverse, and it's not just black and white, obviously. But when you just see it,
right,
page by page, picture by picture, you get a sense of the hue of America, don't you?
That's right. Yeah, and I think that was one of the motivations that the New York Times had for doing this. And operationally, John, I'll just mention it was challenging to assemble everybody for headshots for this. But the end product, I think, is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And I have to mention to you, you know, it is a representative sample of registered voters in the country. But we at NORC, we made sure that we had a representative sample on race and ethnicity and also young adults. We did not want to get things right, so to speak, just on political party identification.
Right.
We really curated this sample, if you will, to make sure that it would look like America at the end of the day. Hmm. We knew that there were going to be television cameras. There was a film documentary crew there the whole time, John, interviewing the researchers such as myself and the delegates there. There were a lot of eyeballs on this event. And we wanted to make sure that, you know, it would actually be a representative look who we are right now as a country.
Well, if you want to see what that looks like, what Mike Dennis is talking about from the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, where can we go? It was in Sunday's New York Times, but where can I read more about the findings and see some of this stuff, Mike?
Sure. I refer you to a website at Stanford University. It's called the Center for Deliberative Democracy, CDD, Center for Deliberative Democracy. You can find the full report there, all the statistical tables. Just a reminder, John, we did the survey of these delegates several months ago, and then we surveyed them again on the exact same issues as they were leaving this four-day meeting. So that's how we're able to measure the extent to which people's ideas and beliefs and political ideas were changing as a result of this.
By the way, are you on a farm right now?
It's an unusual situation. I have neighbors with roosters, John. That's all I can tell you.
Because when I think of the University of Chicago, I don't think of roosters going in the background, but there they are.
Yeah, there they are. My apologies for that, but this is my home office situation today.
I think it's utterly charming. And did you say you do or don't mind having roosters living next door?
My wife has a different opinion on all this. I actually have grown to like them over time. So it works out well for us, and it keeps my dogs entertained as well. So there's that plus.
Yeah, you've kept us entertained. Nice work on that. So CDD, the Center for Deliberative, what's that again?
Center for Deliberative Democracy. At Stanford University.
All right.
And I wanted to simply, if I could, John, acknowledge our NORC team. We had a couple dozen people work really hard to get this representative sample there and get the surveys done. And they're all based there in the Chicago area, with a couple of exceptions. So it was Chicago definitely put its imprint on this study.
Yeah, so I can tell in the Sunday's New York Times if you just pick up a copy of it, too. Well done. Nice to talk to you. We should meet again, Mike. My best to you and all of the farm animals where you are today.
Very good. Thanks for the time today, John.
Yeah, have a good day. That's Mike Dennis at the University of Chicago National Opinion Research Center.